Hello, it's Monday, May 16th, and you are listening to the DreamStation.cc video game show. I am your host, Chris, and this is show number 5. We have a website you can check out, www.dreamstation.cc. We also have an email address that you can send any feedback, questions, or comments to. It's videogameshow@dreamstation.cc. Let's introduce the panel of guys we got today. We have Keith.
Hello.
Ivan.
Hello.
Bob.
Good evening.
And Phil.
Damn it, Bob, you took my saying again.
Good evening, because that's all you have to say. Good evening.
Tonight, we will be discussing Phantasy Star Online Blueburst, talk about the poll results for the BitTorrent question, and pose a new question. The next version of America's Army will use the Unreal 3 engine, PSP battery life, Blockbuster will now rent UMDs, the Nintendo Revolution, Nintendo going with IGN/GameSpy, PlayStation Portable review of Lumens, infamous Xbox premiere on MTV, and kind of a roundup of all the specs we have currently on the Xbox.
Next topic.
Starting off with housekeeping, I got some emails from a couple different people that were kind of mad that we aren't saying the ham sandwich reference every show now. We have to figure a way how to sneak it in, I guess, without being blatantly overt about it.
The feeling has to be there.
You have to feel it.
Got to come from the heart.
Just like kind ham. Ham's near and dear to my heart.
No, I think that's just a blockage, dude. I'm sorry.
We still have the two contests up at Dream Station. We have the SWAT 4 contest for the PC, where we're giving away 3 signed copies of the game. We also have an NBA Street 3 contest for 4 copies of the Xbox version of the game, as well as some t-shirts. We had some kind of Guild Wars review feedback, and I don't want to spend a lot of time rehashing everything that we said on Guild Wars. It was pointed out to me that PvP doesn't really yield rewards for the PvE game, and as far as the party, we were kind of complaining that you can only have 4 guys in a party. As you progress through the game, you get the ability to have more and more people in your party, so when you start out pre-searing, you have 2. Post-searing is 4, and then apparently there's 2 more stages where you can get up to 6.
Retarded!
Sorry. Up to 6, and then a maximum of 8 people in your party.
You have to unlock the ability to group with your friends. Yeah.
They put it as a kind of a more casual game, you know, where you don't have to spend time doing the dumb stuff like traveling or grouping with your friends. One of the guys on the forums did say about 10 hours in, you can unlock up to, I believe, 6 players. Hopefully I didn't mistake what he was saying, but we played probably more than 10 hours, and first of all, we didn't get much past level like 13, 14, and secondly, I think we only had the 4 people in the group. I also forgot to mention the fact that tonight's intro and outro music was done by Redeema. If you have any music ideas or anything, don't send me the actual files. Just send me an email to videogameshow@dreamstation.cc and I can get it in here until we get an actual honest-to-God theme song.
Next topic.
Phantasy Star Online Blueburst is in beta. I played it briefly. It was a little bit confusing for me, being a newbie to the game. It seemed like a cool idea. It's a multiplayer online game. I don't want to say that it's massive. It's kind of like Guild Wars in that you have different rooms and lobbies, and you can group up with your friends, and you can go out there, and it's more of a real-time kind of action, third-person role-playing game set in futuristic times. The beta is free. You can go to psobb.com and download the beta, and I think you can play it for 4 to 9 months. I don't remember the exact end date, but you can try it out, and I know there will be a monthly fee when it does go live. I want to say it's $10, but don't quote me on that one.
Next topic.
The forum topic for this past week was talking about BitTorrent, and have you used it, yes or no? More and more games are relying on BitTorrent to move big pieces of data. For those that don't know, very briefly, BitTorrent is a way to share bandwidth, so the more people that download a particular file, that bandwidth is shared across all those people so that your download is that much faster. You're not downloading from one source, and it's not bogging down the original server. World of Warcraft uses BitTorrent to put out their patches. Phantasy Star Online used BitTorrent for their beta. It was one of the ways you can get it, and more gaming sites, gaming companies, patches, etc. are using BitTorrent so that they're not having to pay thousands and thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth. They could share it out amongst their customers, which when you stop and think about it is kind of crappy in that you're paying $50 for World of Warcraft, you're paying $15 a month, you're paying $50 a month for your internet connection, and in addition to that, they're kind of counting on you to help them distribute their patches to all your other friends. So
when I was downloading a lot of updates that usually I'd be hosting
using more bits than I was downloading, which kind of stinks.
There was 11 votes on the poll this last week. 5 folks said yes, they have used BitTorrent or do use BitTorrent. 5 of them say no, they have not used it, and one of them didn't know what it was. So hopefully the one that didn't know what it was, now you know what it is. Comments that did stand out: Extreme Gene said that he uses it mostly for anime, and that he was disappointed that big companies sometimes don't provide the initial seeds, and that was kind of what we were just talking about. If World of Warcraft and Blizzard is using it to put their patches out, you would hope that they would have 2 or 3 different machines dedicated to start that hosting. That way, if nothing else, you have at least 3 guaranteed full completed files. WhoCast pointed out the fact that nothing in BitTorrent is anonymous. A lot of you guys that were using Kazaa stuff to do your piracy, you could just not share out your folder. The way BitTorrent works is when you are downloading, you are also uploading. So keep that in mind when you're downloading these shows, that if you are downloading anything copyrighted or illegal, they can find you. It's just a matter of, you know, you're playing the lottery. There's so many folks out there.
No, it's not that they can. They will.
Just be aware, if you're downloading stuff, I personally would stay away from the latest, greatest movies, TV shows, and music, because that's what these big sites are watching to try and get people for downloading. Xbox is introducing the concept of microtransactions, which we're going to get into a little bit later in the show. The question is going to be, are you looking forward to them, yes or no? That'll be the poll question. I'll probably post it later tonight or tomorrow. By the time you guys are hearing this, it should be up.
Next topic.
The next version of the America's Army game will be using the Unreal 3 engine. The first America's Army game cost the taxpayer $12 million to develop. They developed it from the ground up internally in the U.S. Army. They said it was a cost-effective recruitment tool. The thing I wanted to point out was that kind of shows how little we know about how our government is spending our money. That $12 million is a cost-effective recruitment tool. I mean, I guess with all the stuff going on overseas, it's harder and harder. They're having less people volunteer to join the Army, so they're trying to get people in with games. The game was free to download. You just had to go to the America's Army website. You could download and play the game. Did any of you guys play this game at all?
Yeah, I played it once.
And what did you think?
Pretty much just a solid first-person shooter. You run around, you shoot things. It's nothing complicated and crazy. I just played it for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, just try it out, but then never got back around to playing it again. It was all right for what I played. I mean,
did you play the actual game, or did you do the training stuff?
I did. Went through the little training thing and then played the game itself for a little bit.
Okay.
I can't see how they could claim that being a cost-effective recruitment tool. The only way I heard of it was from you, Chris, and another guy from work that's a gamer also. I don't know who's doing recruiting here. I mean, if they want to recruit people, why don't you, like, publicly market this, television or radio, somebody from the Army promoting this, and...
That's a good point.
I'm hearing it from gamers, not the military.
Well, maybe they think that has a little more, I don't know what the word is.
They're trying to disassociate it with that to make it look more like a regular game and draw interest. At least this is what I personally feel. They're not trying to so much associate it with the Army in that. They're trying to just put it out as a game, and hopefully the game itself draws interest, and you'll go check out the Army or the Navy or whatever.
It's a pretty expensive experiment, if you ask me. I mean, I could figure $12 million to...
Yes and no, but you have to also look at the budget for recruiting is something ridiculous.
I don't know how much we spend on recruiting every year, but if they're saying that $12 million is cost-effective, that must mean we spend tons more on, you know, paper pamphlets, going to people's high school, radio, TV, advertising. Keith hit on the fact that they're trying to, here, this is gaming, this is a little more realistic. They're not trying to promote the fact that, hey, you may be sent over to a hot, sweaty desert and get shot at. And it was a little bit more realistic, so it wasn't Unreal Tournament where everybody was jumping around or anything. It was a pretty good game once you got past the training. I didn't like the fact that you have to follow this guy yelling at you. You go down in the little trench and then you're shooting at these little sights and you have to hit a certain number to continue to the next phase. Well, of course, as everybody does, you turn around and you shoot the drill sergeant and then he starts yelling at you that you're firing the weapon in the wrong area. So once you got past that, the actual game wasn't bad.
You're talking to, of course he's going to yell at you. You just shot one of the commanding officers.
I went for the medic track and it was kind of wild. You had to take like a test. You watch, like, seriously, a 5 or 10 minute video on how to, like, tie tourniquets and the fact that you take the blood and you write on their forehead, like, what time you applied the tourniquet and stuff. And then you had to take a test, like a multiple choice test, 10 or 15 questions. I don't remember exactly how many. But if you didn't pass that test, you couldn't be a medic in the game.
I think you could just carry a Sharpie or something. Is it really necessary to write it in their own blood? No, I got a pen right here. No, it must be done this way.
Although you would know then who sucks. If Harry walks in on Monday morning and he has a big 10:05 on his forehead and Sharpie, kind of know he doesn't know how to dodge very well. So anyways, the next version they've signed on again to do another version. They're going to use the new Unreal Engine. I don't really have a problem with the fact that the military is spending money to develop games, especially because it was a pretty cool game and it was free to play and it was a little more realistic. You had to actually reload your weapons and you aim down the sights and stuff, so I don't have a problem with it.
Next topic.
I wanted to talk very briefly about the PSP battery life. I know that people were complaining the battery life on the PlayStation Portables wasn't really that long. I had gone on a trip this past weekend, and I threw American History X on my memory stick. So I played the movie from my memory stick. It was like a two-hour movie. Playing off the memory stick, it only used 10% of the total battery power. That would mean that you could probably watch around, 20 hours of movie without the batteries dying, which is a whole heck of a lot better than the 3 to 6 or 3 to 7 hours off the UMD, because, you know, again, no spinning parts and stuff. So as long as you're watching off the memory stick, you're all right. I will admit that the battery life isn't too swift if you're watching movies off of the UMD.
Next topic.
Speaking of UMDs, Blockbuster is going to start renting UMDs for the PlayStation Portable. A UMD, again, is Universal Media Disc. They're really, really itty-bitty, 2-inch, 3-inch across DVDs that fit just under 2 gigs of info, 1-point-something gigs of info on them. Blockbuster is going to start renting them. Movies and games both come out for them. They're supposedly going to start tomorrow, the 17th of May. Rumors are around that the PlayStation 3 will support UMD. Again, just a rumor. I won't be buying a $24 UMD of a movie that I already own on DVD. I wouldn't even necessarily rent it from Blockbuster. The games, maybe. Although, I mean, based on Blockbuster's track history of how people don't return the instructions with the game, a UMD is small enough where I could see people losing them. Maybe that's what they're counting on, so they can charge you $50 for it.
Next topic.
Okay, the Nintendo Revolution. Nintendo in a mad dash to kind of put something out there for the world to see and so that we don't forget about them. They're going to release the Revolution in mid-2006. It's going to be a very small, tiny system. It's going to be the height of 3 DVD cases. So if you lay your DVD cases lengthwise, maybe 2 inches tall.
Probably less than 2 inches.
Supposedly going to be backwards compatible. Nintendo said that they're going to be backwards compatible, so you can play all the current Nintendo games on it, as well as it's going to support DVD format disc. So they finally come up with the rest of the people, and you can hopefully watch DVDs and stuff on it. I don't know if the DVD playback has been confirmed or not. It will, along with, you know, the Xbox went this way, but Nintendo is going to support official wireless controllers, and I believe those are going to be the standard. I know they have the WaveBird, and Ivan and I kind of talked about that a week or two ago, that we do approve of the WaveBird, one of the few wireless controllers that we liked. I'm not a big fan of just in general. I want wired and wireless. I just feel more comfortable knowing that there's a wire that my battery isn't going to run out. We all sit around the TV and you get beat up and you could have sworn that you pushed the button and it didn't do anything, and it's one of those you won't really know until 3 games later. You're like, oh yeah, my battery is dying. So you've been getting your butt kicked for the last 3 games.
I just like the wireless controllers for when there's large groups of us playing and we're just constantly rotating the controllers around. There's no tangles, no messes.
Just like Johnson's baby shampoo.
I think if Nintendo or Xbox, if they do their controllers, I think they'll be good. I think the problem I had with wireless controllers in the past were that, like, Mad Cats put out the wireless controller, so it was ugly and stupid and uncomfortable and cheap. And I think that's why the WaveBirds are so good, because Nintendo produced them and they're identical in every way to a GameCube controller, other than they're wireless, and I think the WaveBirds don't vibrate is the only difference. But other than that, it's identical. So it's a little bit heavier, but you could pick up a wired one, you could switch to a wireless one. You don't have to, like, get used to the new feel or anything.
Right.
So I think if Microsoft and or Nintendo, you know, starts doing this wireless stuff, I think it'll be a lot better than third-party stuff. And the only other thing I can think is, I think we had mentioned this when we were talking, somebody sometime has got to come up with, like, a rechargeable lithium ion battery for these things, and like a docking station you just plug the controller into at the end of the day when you're done playing a game, instead of having to spend $100 a month on AA batteries for your 4 wireless controllers.
The Nintendo gets busted out when everybody shows up at the house, maybe once a month, if that, and we're playing 4-player Mario Kart and stuff. We have 3 wireless and 1 wired controllers, and to be honest, I don't think more than 1 controller ran out of batteries, and that was because I keep my controllers in the closet. The button was either not set to off, or it got jostled in putting it back. Controller was left on for a month. Aside from that, all the battery life has actually been really, really good, and as Ivan said, it wasn't something that's going to rumble or vibrate. right? So you're saving probably a ton of battery juice there. One thing that is interesting is that Nintendo has kind of realized the error of their ways, and they put out a statement maybe a year ago that said, you know, they just don't see online gaming as being something that's going to be big in the future. And, you know, they ate their hat and they decided, okay, we have to come up with a strategy for online gaming. Xbox Live, you guys have seen it. I think it does the best job of organizing everything. And yeah, you got to pay $50, but all the games are supporting, you know, voice chat, headsets. That's a requirement. It's not like PlayStation where certain titles would, certain titles wouldn't. I'm very glad to hear that Nintendo is going online and they're supporting it full blown. And I hope that that's something that works out.
Next topic.
Nintendo did choose to go with IGN / GameSpy to do kind of an online network for the DS. So I hope that if their online strategy for the Revolution is going to happen, that they don't decide to go with IGN and GameSpy for that as well. I hope this is just kind of a one-off thing for the DS that they're, you know, they decided, oh crap, we messed up, we need to get this thing online. Now the only one of us that owns a DS is Ivan, and I think that doesn't the DS have Wi-Fi? It's Bluetooth, it's not,
Yeah, it's as far as I know, there's no way to connect over the internet. It's just got a Bluetooth wireless controller, which means if you're close enough to another Bluetooth device, you can connect to it. In comparison to like the PSP, it's got both ad hoc and infrastructure, which essentially is either people close to you or connect to a wireless router. I've been out of the loop on a lot of technology stuff for a while since I haven't been doing that for a living. I don't know if they make like Bluetooth
hubs or
network
something.
Cards. Yeah, something like that. That would be the only way, I think, unless I've got my specs wrong on the DS. I don't know how they plan on, unless they did what they did with the Game Boy Advance SP and release a wireless adapter thing that plugs into it. That would be the only way I could think they'd do it for the DS.
Because I agree with you, I don't know how Bluetooth is going to work going from us here in Ohio all the way out to somebody in California. I played Twisted Metal head-on. I was playing from people all over the world online, which was really cool. Ivan, you and I talked about this a little bit when you first got the DS. It's Bluetooth, and it kind of stinks because Bluetooth range is, what, you know, like 200-300 feet, something like that?
It's not even that. I think it's like 50 feet.
Doesn't really go through walls. It gets interference from other Bluetooth things in the area. It wasn't that good. You might as well have had the stupid little connectivity cord that the Game Boy SP uses. I'm not sure how this is going to work, and I'm also not sure why exactly Nintendo chose to go with IGN. All of us, or at least half of us, have had firsthand poor experiences with IGN, and we're all kind of boycotting them. And
so I have at least a 2-year boycott on any IGN stuff, either their website or any kind of game guides or anything. And anytime somebody sends me a link to an IGN article, I refuse to look at it solely for the purpose that it's hosted on IGN.
And without getting,
we had problems with Dawn of War also. At least I did when we started playing Dawn of War. About,
that's the joke, is that all these games are using GameSpy. Everybody calls it LameSpy because it kind of sucks. They use the GameSpy to browse for other games online. And I mean, I guess that's how this DS thing would work, is it would be kind of central servers keeping track of who's playing what game. I'm not sure how that they're going to boost the signal to get it across. You know, as they release that information, we'll bring it to you. But I know my experience was with File Planet, where you're kind of signing up and paying to download game patches and stuff. My computer went down and I lost all my patches, so I figured, oh, I'll just sign up for 1 month or a quarter or whatever it was, and I got a free World of Warcraft beta subscription. So I tried that, and then I told the people that I only wanted to be in for that one time period, and they automatically renewed me. And then when I had called to complain and emailed to complain them, they said, oh, you know, you should have read the fine print. Oh, and as a matter of fact, I noticed here that just last week you downloaded a game patch, so you must love the service. And I said, well, come on, check the last time I downloaded something before that.
That was the exact same issue I had with IGN. I subscribed to their Premier service or something like that because there was one game I wanted a game guide for. And the only way to get it is if you were on this Premier service, and they had an introductory, you know, free 7-day trial thing or something, and I signed up for it, and it took me 3 months for them to actually cancel my subscription.
Sounds like these places are well worth it.
You know, honestly, I can understand the whole File Planet thing. It's going to be bandwidth for these companies, and to be honest, when a game does poor in retail, Atari isn't going to want to keep the patch out on their server somewhere. So they fork it over to, they partner with File Planet and a bunch of other sites that can mirror it. And Final Planet, you know, it's a good idea. You can get the free version and download this thing kind of when your place in line comes up and you have a limit on how fast you can go. Or you can pay, I want to say, $7 a month and you get unlimited downloading. But it's just, how often are you really going to download patches and stuff anymore? Most of the games are doing auto-updating anyways, so...
Next topic.
We have a PlayStation Portable review of Lumens.
Lumens is a cool puzzle game that, either good or bad, gets a lot of its heritage from Tetris. I think most puzzle games anymore kind of do, but Lumens is different in that there's not different puzzle piece sizes. They're all 2x2 squares, but they're usually a mix of one or two colors, so you can have different variations of the color combination. And instead of dropping from the top down and then piling them up, and when you get them lined up across the bottom or something, that line disappears. With Lumens, you drop the pieces down from the top and you have to form 2x2 colors. So if you're playing with green and red colors, you have to match 2x2 green. Instead of lining them all up, you have a thing called the timeline, which sweeps from left to right at kind of a slow pace. And as it sweeps by, if it runs across anything that's a 2x2 color match, it makes that disappear. It took me a while and I still haven't gotten, you know, I'm still not awesome at the game. I'm still trying to figure out how to do cool combinations to get lots of and lots of points. The graphics are pretty cool as far as a puzzle game can be. The backgrounds are kind of cool. They have different shades and shapes, textures for the pieces and stuff, so it's not just ugly Tetris, red, blue, yellow, green colors the whole time. The music is really good. It's kind of a mix between techno rock and heavy metal rock and other stuff, and it keeps switching up. The manual, again, companies anymore are getting really poor in their manual. How to actually play the game, they have different modes as well. Single player mode, multiplayer mode, single player mode versus a computer, puzzle mode, which is where you're supposed to do, instead of just clearing screen after screen of blocks, you're supposed to do a specific task. That was the part I had a problem with. It says make a square or something like that, and I still haven't figured out exactly how to play that puzzle mode.
Is it the second one in? I think I'm stuck on the same one you are. The first puzzle, you have to arrange, like Ivan said, they're two colored blocks. So you have to, if the blocks are all white and red, let's say, you got to make the little red spots form up to be a certain shape. We tried to do that, tried to match their little block at the bottom to make this diamond shape. Couldn't do it, got frustrated with it, said whatever, didn't mess with it any more than that.
I got annoyed with the music because it plays the same levels in the same order every time you play it, and I'm not overly great at those games, so I listen to the same song many, many times in a row.
That is true.
Now, the one thing that we didn't kind of hit on is that the whole game is supposed to kind of revolve around this. The little gimmick was that the timeline goes along, the beats will happen according to the song that's playing in the background, which is your typical Dance Dance Revolution kind of techno-y remix music, which I lowered the volume after playing it for 2 seconds anyways. The music, to me, didn't get me in a groove or anything. You know, Dance Dance Revolution, you can hear the music and it'll kind of help you play. This was just this little spaceship flying across the top, destroying blocks as it goes. It didn't matter to me if it lined up with the music or not. I was just trying to make a 2x2 square of a particular color so that would kind of go away and leave me some space to build more pieces on.
It's funny that you say that, because until you told me that timeline is supposed to move in time with the music, I didn't even realize that. So that shows you how intuitive that part of the game was. That never even occurred to me that, hey, look, the little timeline's bouncing around to the beat of the music. It never even occurred to me.
It is a very addictive game, though.
Great time diversion games. It's really not something you're going to sit down and play for 4 hours on end. It's a puzzle game. All puzzle games to me are the same in that respect, in that you don't sit down and play it for 8 hours on end like you would a role-playing game or something.
My wife, Heather, liked the game. The only thing she had problems with was when you beat the current level and you move to the next level and the song switches and the background switches, the colors on the blocks will also switch. So you start with, I think, white and green, and then it'll become like a silver and gold maybe. And the effect that it does, it kind of flashes the screen and distorts everything for a second. It takes you a good 3 to 5 seconds to realize, all right, what the heck just happened? Okay, now I understand. All the green became this color, all this other, you know, disorienting.
It is a little disorienting, yeah. You get into this groove where you're staring at green and silver blocks for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. You're staring at those colors, and then for no apparent reason, you switch to level 2, and now all of a sudden you're looking at, like, red and blue blocks or something, and yeah, your eyes are just like, whoa, wait. out of 10, I'd probably give it a 7.5 or so. I mean, it's a good solid game. There's really not a whole lot wrong with it, but I still have yet to find the perfect puzzle game. One of those games that is fun to play, has infinite replay value like Tetris. If I wasn't just so sick of Tetris because it's Tetris, you know, I'd be looking for something new.
I think if I were to give it a number, I would probably give it an 8 out of 10. Is it worth $50? I don't know, about 50, 30. Yeah, it's well worth $30. Keith, what would you rate it out of a 10?
I would say about an 8. My only real problem with it is hearing the exact same music constantly.
Next topic.
The Xbox premiered the Xbox 360 on MTV Thursday night, and I already know, but I'm going to ask just for the sake of the listeners, hey, did any of you guys happen to catch that?
No.
Heavens, no.
It was exactly the way that I thought it would be. It's all flash, no substance. It's geared for the, I guess I would say, 10 to 18-year-olds, maybe. I mean, flashing colors. Everybody in the crowd was hand-selected. You could just take from the very little snippets I've seen of TRL with Carson Daly, pull Carson Daly out, put the Xbox 360 in instead of Carson Daly, and you have the same show, just like girls dancing in their tank tops screaming, yay, you know, Xbox rules. They have no idea what it is. It was a half-hour show. I would say 10 or 15 minutes of that show was commercials. They showed 1, maybe 2 minutes of actual in-game footage, and the disappointing thing about the in-game footage is the majority of it was pre-rendered cinema scenes. They had a very little bit of Perfect Dark play screen when they did kind of a celebrity death match with, what's that guy's name from that 70s show, Vilmer or something or other?
Fez?
Yeah, so they had Fez, and then they had the one hot frag doll girl, Valkyrie, and they had a couple other people, like professional gamers, and they went to Rave Entertainment, and they interviewed. I mean, it was just, they didn't get into any meat and substance. I think it was successful because we were not the intended audience. The intended audience were the people that had accidentally left on Real World right before, and they said, oh, this Xbox thing, all right, well, there's Frodo, let's leave this on and see what this is. It was kind of a joke. Like I said, I hated it. I thought it was dreadful. Even my wife was making fun. Sway, who's the black guy with kind of the headdress, went to Xbox headquarters and was doing an interview with the lead guy, Jay Allard, who's like the VP of research or whatever of Microsoft for the Xbox, and, you know, all Sway had to ask about was the custom faceplates, and he's just so impressed by the ability that you can take the Xbox 360 and slap your own faceplate on the front of it. And my wife made a comment in that, you know, Sway has no clue, does he? And it was interesting coming from her because she is not a gamer geek, so she doesn't know a whole lot about it either, but she knows enough to know that the line of questioning this idiot was doing was just not even close to what information I was looking for. They asked the Pimp My Ride guys to mod an Xbox. So it wasn't the new Xbox, it was the old big monster black Xbox. So we got a good 5 minutes about how Mad Mike and the boys would slap a skull with LED lights for the eyes and stuff. It was just, it was pathetic. It was a joke. And again, I think it was successful because it was not geared towards us. It was geared towards the MTV audience who, it's not me.
Which the entire world could do without.
A couple things that I do also have to say about this whole debacle is that they did an interview with Rave, who are the guys who made Perfect Dark Zero, which is going to be one of the release date launches. They're using Apple G5s as the development platform. That was a rumor back in the day, but then you see all these Apple computers running all of the, you know, the prototype code. Last I checked, Microsoft and Apple weren't really in bed together, right? I mean,
Microsoft does own stock in Apple, but still, they are direct competitors. It does seem quite ridiculous that they would develop the Xbox on Macintoshes.
And Perfect Dark looked lame. It looked choppy. It was definitely not ready to be run. I mean, they showed these snippets. It was kind of like a typical MTV. I mean, they had like the hot blonde come out with the Xbox and she slammed it down in the middle of the stage and the green lights were going around and everybody started dancing and then whoever the killers were, they came out and did a video or two.
Isn't that how it happens at your house when you break out the new system?
That's right. I did. I had you in that thong and I brought you home and you slammed that GameCube down on the desk and we danced around you and stuff.
Exactly.
I put the strobe light on.
See, I just gotta remind you of these things that you forget.
I forgot. I apologize.
Next topic.
I guess we can move into the actual Xbox specs. If you haven't seen it, you can go to www.xbox360.com. That site is live. You can take a virtual tour of the console and the controllers and the peripherals. It's kind of hard to use because there's all these different navigation buttons and each button will click the Xbox console around in a different orientation. I have to admit, it does have pretty sweet stats. There's 3.2 gigahertz processors in it. There's 512 megs of RAM. I mean, those two things alone, that's going to make it faster and more muscles than even the highest-end PCs that you can buy right now. I mean, and it's there's 6 different threads that can run on these 3 processors, so you're just eons above the high-end PCs right now. Keith, you and I were talking this morning, and kind of today, I think, was the first time that you really sat and looked at the stats, and I think you're running like like a 1.8 gigahertz. This has got, you know, twice that speed and then three of them, and then it's got six threads instead of one. So this is a crazy powerhouse box. So, I don't think...
Yes, I am but a meager bologna sandwich to the ham that is Xbox.
As far as the wireless controllers are go, supposedly a 30-foot range, they're going to run on two AA batteries. It will have rumble in it, and it supposedly is going to last 40 hours. Now, there wasn't an asterisk next to the 40 hours, but I have a hard time believing that it's going to really run for 40 hours on your high-intensity rumble. The rumble is selectable. You got low, medium, and high. There's a rechargeable battery pack that will be sold separately. That's kind of what Ivan hit on earlier, was that somehow you're going to be able to recharge this thing, and I guess they're going to use like a USB adapter when your batteries get low, so you're not going to be stranded without a gaming console, without a controller for it. They will have a wired alternative. The controllers are going to be 9 feet. One of the things I do like about the Xbox, it's pretty petty and trivial, but...
That's a huge controller!
The cord will be 9 feet. The controller itself, I hope, to be man-hand size.
Handheld, maybe?
Yeah. The system is going to be wireless network adapter. I think they're going to have a wired alternative again. The DVD player will be progressive scan, but it's going to be current technology. It's not going to be the high-def Blu-ray, whatever they're going to, you know, come out with that the PlayStation 3 is going to use. There are going to be two flavors of Xbox Live. Xbox Live will come with the console, and Silver, which rumor has it that it's going to be weekend play only. You're not going to be able to play any time other than the weekends, or you could pay the $50 or whatever it is and get the gold, which is just like Xbox Live today. You're going to have like a camera that you can take a picture yourself, and it's going to be all customizable where you can select your skin and your desktop theme kind of, and you're going to be able to have your faceplate on the front of your console, and you can have it look whatever color you want. There wasn't any talk about backwards compatibility, so no one is for sure if the current Xbox games are going to be able to be played on the new Xbox. I think it would be a really good idea for them to do it. I mean, it's not going to help them if Nintendo has already said they're going to do it, and no word from PlayStation, but they've done it in the past, so they're probably leaning that way. 30 to 40 titles by January 1st. It's going to launch in November, and they didn't really release the price, but we had reported here that it's probably going to be around $300. That seems to be the sweet spot. As far as the whole microtransactions, the Xbox Live is going to be much more tightly integrated with every game. Example that this moron used on MTV was that if you like Echo, which is a clothing company, you can pay, you know, 99 cents and have your character in-game to now wear an Echo t-shirt. This is the first time, really, I think, that a console has ever launched with more powerful than a PC. And PC games, we already said they're dying. This isn't helping the cause when you got a console that's six times more powerful than a high-end PC right now today. So
it's a trade-off. I wouldn't mind so much not playing PC games if the console games were that much better. Then I wouldn't have to worry about having such a high-end PC all the time if all I'm going to be using it for is word processing and surfing the net and sending email.
There are little inputs on the controller for the Xbox 360 that supposedly you can attach a mini keyboard for the little PDA keyboards and stuff. They're thinking about all the hacks and mods people have done with the current generation of Xbox, where they have, you know, MAME emulators running so you can play, you know, your arcade games and all. You can play your MP3s and everything else. There's going to be a 20 gig hard drive supposedly that you can buy separately. Microsoft is realizing, look, we need to tie all this stuff in. People hacked our Xbox. They put all this stuff on there. Even if they went and partnered with Apple and did like an iTunes thing, that would fit in with their microtransactions where you could buy music or video content right off the web. And then it could be truly an all-in-one media center. You know, you could rent movies and stuff off of it.
I think that pretty much covers everything.
Does anyone...
What's going on this week?
So you were listening to show number 5 of the DreamStation.cc video game show. The email address once again for questions, comments, and feedback is videogameshow@DreamStation.cc. You can check out the website, DreamStation.cc, where you can set your podcast to automatically get this feed every week. You can visit our forums as well as get news. And again, the guys are out in E3 this week. There will be a lot of E3 news going up throughout the week. If you wouldn't mind, take a visit over to podcastalley.com. And if you enjoy the show, please vote for us. And aside from that, thank you guys very much for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Anybody have anything else?
See you next week.